And so I do get asked by a lot of creatives, you know, well, how should I do this? Or how should I do that? Or, you know, blah, 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 blah. It always comes down to fear. And fear will always be the thing that will either drive you to do something or drive you to hold yourself back.
That's the voice of Candace Luter, owner of Candace Luter Art and Interiors. And I'm excited to talk with her right after these quick words from our sponsors.
Introducing Astra HP, the newest high-performance innovation in cutting-edge technology from Bits and Bits. Let me tell you what's new about it. It's incredibly thin, measuring at just 0.3 microns. It's also tougher than ever with an impressive 5,000 Vickers hardness, and it's specially designed to reduce friction and heat buildup, leading to cleaner cuts and longer tool life. Available now on all their newest spiral CNC bits and router bits. So if you want to check it out yourself, go to bitsbits.com. That's BITS, BITS.com.
Hello and welcome to Building a Furniture Brand with Ethan Abramson, the show that talks about the business behind the furniture business. On this episode, I sit down with Candace Luter, owner of Candace Luter Art and Interiors. Candace follows her heart, and it has taken her to some very impressive places, both in design and in business. As you will hear, her company started out not even really as an idea. It was just a feeling that she needed to create something. But from that first spark, she has grown her company to soaring heights, building a wonderful team, appearing in some of the most respected publications out there, and working with some of the biggest retailers in the world. Follow along as we talk about believing in your own vision, how to treat your team with respect, failure being the road to success, and much more. So let's start the episode and hear about Candace's story in her own words.
Like many people, I was in corporate America, not sure what I want to do when I grew up, even though I was in my 30s, right? So I was trying to come to terms with, I'm a single mom, I need to have the stability for my daughter, but really this was just not fulfilling for me. And I just turned 40 this year, the big 40. I'm also coming to terms with that as well too. But I say that to say, when I was younger and growing up, entrepreneur wasn't a word. So when you're creative, or I'm sketching in meetings and things like that, like I'm just thinking, I'm lazy, I'm not paying attention, you know, maybe I have ADHD, but you know, what can I even do with that? Because really, I don't want to be a starving artist. So when Pinterest kind of came on the scene, you know, I was just like soaking that up, just like everybody was. I was pinning all the things, I was trying to do all the things. And I quickly realized that in order for me to do what I wanted to do, I needed power tools, which I did not know how to use them at all. But I had these strong, husky neighbors that were contractors, and I didn't want to look like the damsel in distress, but I was like, can you please teach me how, you know, X, Y, and Z? Well, they were just doing it for me. So I was like, okay, screw this. So I went on YouTube, got myself a little Black & Decker drill, and started to, you know, hang up curtains and, you know, whatever else a single woman like needs help with. And I was like, this is pretty cool. So of course, my next thought is I should buy a saw, because that makes sense, right? You know, so I go and buy a saw and asked my neighbor to help me. He's like, well, you know, you can hurt yourself, right? And I'm like, well, yeah, obviously, if I don't do it right. So he taught me how to make a couple cuts, and the rest was history. So, you know, really, this was started out to just be not even a side hustle. It really was just a creative outlet for me as a single mom, aside from being a mother, aside from, you know, corporate America, just something for me to put my hand to. And so, you know, fast forward, I thought, you know, I should get involved in farmers markets. And I remember in my cubicle one day, my coworker said, well, you don't really make anything and you don't have a business. And I was like, ah, that's just details. Like, I'll figure it out. So I got a, you know, a business name, which was something different than it was today, and started showing at farmers markets. Now, I had no idea how to market anything, how to, you know, really make anything, how to price anything. And I was just sort of making it up as I went along. And if you're from the Midwest like I am, we love a good deal. We're very conservative. So everyone was like hustling me on, you know, my prices, which were already like ridiculously low. But it was so fulfilling to me that people liked what I was doing. So I did that for a couple of years. And after hauling literally U-Hauls every 2 weeks with my then like 8-year-old daughter, and I'm not even ashamed to admit, like I was making her lift dressers with me. I was making her pass business cards, like nobody report me to like DHS. Like it was total child labor. And I was like making her work it. Like, you want to be successful in life, no one's going to give it to you. Like, you got to go out there and get it, right? And so we were hustling at farmers markets. And I was like, this is way too much work. So I thought, well, I'll put myself on an Etsy, which was really intimidating to me because the market was really just saturated at that point. And I thought, I'm a little late to the game, but, you know, I'm making stuff for my new house and we'll just see what happens. Well, after a couple of months, I got an email from West Elm asking, you know, we would be interested in retailing your things. And then I also got an email from Lulu in Georgia, and I quickly like clicked off like in a panic, like, oh my gosh, these people, like, I'm not professional. Do they know what the back looks like? Like, this is just hot glue. Like, I don't know anything. And so, you know, I began to embark on just learning by just jumping in with both feet and figuring things out. And that's kind of how I have been since then, whether bad or good, you know, without a business plan, with receipts everywhere in shoeboxes, and just kind of just figuring out, you know, as I went along. And that really just took me to here today.
There is so much amazing stuff to unpack in that opening, and I loved hearing every single part of it, and I want to get into all of it as we go, but you have to start somewhere. So let's start kind of where you started, and that was where you told your coworker, I'm going to start selling stuff as a farmer at a farmer's market, and they responded with, that's great, but you don't have any products. And you said, oh, I'll just figure it out. And that, I think, in a nutshell, is what a entrepreneur and what a creative entrepreneur is all about, where you have that drive, and that's inside of you. And that's something that you need to channel into a product, or channel into something that you want to sell. And that is a feeling that I think a lot of people either have or are searching for. So for people who are searching for that ability to take that feeling and make that jump, let's talk a little bit about that. And I know it goes into more of the emotional and less of the physical or the business side, but let's just talk about that feeling that you had and how you translated an idea, a passion that had no outlet into something that is all outlet and is what you do today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad that you brought this up, because I think this is the core and the nuts and bolts of what it really means to be a creative and an entrepreneur, having a business, et cetera. It really does come down to the emotional, and it really comes down to your mental awareness as far as what you can do and the surroundings like around you. And I mean that, let me clear that up by saying, not everyone's going to be your cheerleader, right? And so when you have a dream, I feel like that dream and that instinct, that drive, that entrepreneurial spirit is for you alone, and not everyone is going to understand that. So number one, not only are you going to have to decide maybe who you share those things with, right? Because it's hard to be your own cheerleader while learning to be your own cheerleader. And I've had to do that while not having the support, you know, whether it's from spouses, whether it's coworkers, friends, like whoever it is that's surrounding you, no one is going to understand your vision and drive but you. And how you believe in yourself is how you market yourself. And I say that now, having really been in the official business since 2019, and I am very blessed to work with a lot of different retailers and big names. It really wasn't until about the last 9 months did I really do the work internally to realize that I had spent a lot of time, a lot of my life, my childhood, looking for validation in other people. And it's so easy to do, to feel like, well, if I get this person's approval, or if they say, yeah, that's a great design, then I'm ready to take the jump, right? You're never gonna feel ready. You're never gonna feel as fully supported as maybe you feel like you need to be in order to do the things, right? And nobody wants to fail, but I heard the other day, failure isn't an option, it's the only option. And I have failed a million and one times and will continue to fail a million and one times, but it really wasn't until I did the work emotionally and mentally to discover who I was and the value that I really brought to myself and to my work and my craft, it really changed my entire perspective, not just on marketing, but in the way I price things. So you're right. That is a big leap of faith between I'm inspired to do something and I want to do something more than what I have, but how do I turn that into a business and how do I make that into a business? And that was difficult for me because it was such a hobby for the longest time that I didn't intend to make it a business. I kind of got pushed into it and then it quickly took off. And so I really grasped with the insecurity of knowing how to do this, what to do, and to ever feel ready to make that leap. Thank God I didn't really have the time to sit and think about it too long because I just had orders that I had to turn. Otherwise, if I had had the time to sit and think about, well, what should I make? And how should I do this? And how should I market? And how should I whatever? I probably would have never jumped in. And so I do get asked by a lot of creatives, you know, well, how should I do this? Or how should I do that? Or, you know, blah, 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 blah. It always comes down to fear. And fear will always be the thing that will either drive you to do something or drive you to, I guess, hold yourself back. And so I think you really touched on like an important point is, you know, how do you make that leap and how do you make that jump? I encourage everybody to just jump. It's not going to feel like landing on your feet. I can tell you that right now, especially from someone who was doing this, that was quickly growing as a business while still working full time. And then in the midst of that, even during pandemic, I lost my full-time job. I lost that security. And so I really had to turn into myself, my faith, the support and the community around me to try to land on my feet and to try to make something out of this. So to be fair, Ethan, I don't even know if I answered your question so much as that's a difficult journey between where you want to be, even if you're not sure where you're going, and then how to turn that into something that's tangible that you're hoping is really going to resonate with other people. And really, it's about the belief of what you really bring to the table that will always be that limiting factor.
It's all answers. When people are talking about their experiences, it doesn't necessarily matter if they're answering the question exactly. And I, as a host and somebody who talks to a lot of people, I hear that a lot where, did I answer the question? And sometimes the question is less important as where you take your answer and where you want it to go. And that actually leads me nicely into another takeaway that I wanted to bring out, validation in other people, seeking validation in other people versus seeking validation in yourself. And that's the difference between a product-based company like you have, where you put your design ideas into a product and it's for you and from you and going out to people and you're hoping to find your audience, versus a custom business where you're building what other people want. And both of those are hard. I'm not saying one's easier than the other. Custom's incredibly hard because you have to take somebody else's idea and make it your own and make it work and then give it back to them and say, is this your idea? But a product-based business like you have is also hard because you put out your ideas into a vacuum and you hope that it latches on to somebody. And if you want to be successful, you hope it latches on to a lot of people. So when you're coming up with ideas for products, how are you balancing the ideas of this is something I want to make and something I want to put out there, but also it's something that I want to be successful in the market to propel my business forward?
Yes. So many good nuggets in that. I was taking notes so I didn't forget. That is so hard because you're right. And we do a mix of both, right? We do a mix of just standard product and then we do a mix of customs. And customs are always hard because it really is about the expectations of others that you're trying to please. Whereas my standard product line, you either take it or you don't, right? And so we do a mix of both. Both are equally scary. I will say the one thing about putting out just standard product is we actually don't stock inventory. And that's something that can be scary for a lot of people. And so in a made-to-order business, it's great because I'm not making it unless I'm getting paid. So not only does that help with cash flow, it also kind of sets the expectations for what may or may not be coming in rather than the pressure of, oh my gosh, I've got all this inventory sitting on the shelves. Now I've got to move this. But then customs, on the other hand, it's really about the other person's interpretations and their level of expectations upon you, which is equally as like crippling. I always say there is a time to be trendy and there's a time to be on trend. And so I probably take the path that is not the, I guess, the common path, the common journey is I look at myself as the customer. And I think, and I don't know if it's just my age group that we grew up with those standard, here's your business plan and who are your customers and who are your da 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 da. And I spent a lot of time stressing out about who my customer was. And then I really came down to this business is about me. My name is the business is me. And so I want to make things that resonate with me. And I hope that it resonates with others. And that may sound very reckless, very maybe not like customer focused, but I just lead with my gut. And it has seemingly worked very well for me. Now, there are things that I have put out there I've led with my gut that maybe have not done as well. And there are others that I have been surprised they have done as well as they have. And so I really don't even get on Pinterest anymore. I don't really even look so much as what is out there. Number one, I don't want to taint my perspective and to dilute my own creativity by comparing myself to other people or inadvertently absorbing other people's designs into my work. So I stay away from that a lot. And I usually go on, you know, like I look into fashion design and get inspired by that, even though I'm in mirror and fiber work, right? Like I really kind of just try to stay outside of my box to keep that as pure as possible. But of course, you know, I do high level understand, you know, what's trending, especially when I'm working with some of these retailers like Bloomingdale's and West Elm and, you know, all of these people. I can see what's coming and what's trending as far as maybe neutrals and patterns and things like that. But I really just lean into my gut and I've learned to trust myself rather than, like I've talked about before, asking other people's approval or opinions on, is this a good design? You know, am I a designer? That was something that I struggled with for a long time because I have no design background whatsoever. And so it really took me a while to believe in myself and what creative things were going on in my mind, even if it didn't make sense to anyone else, to just lead with that. And so I think that's that part of that fear that gets wrapped into is what would happen if, and we always think, well, what would happen if I fail, or this doesn't work, or no one likes this design. But what if that's the thing that people want? What if that's the thing that's going to carry your business? And so, again, there's a time to be trendy and there's a time to be on trend. And I'm a big fan and believer of, especially nowadays, people want original, they want unique, they want to get behind a story. And so I say, when in doubt, make a prototype and put it out there to the world and see how they respond, because that's worked very, very well for us.
You as the customer and you leading with your gut has gotten you pretty far. And we're going to talk about that next of all the major retailers you've worked with. But I also want to take it back. And I think that you would probably second this, as in you aren't just putting something out there and every single thing is landing and everything is great. There are some failures. There are some misses. And so just because you've had success doesn't mean that it's because you're perfect. You have success because you've had failures, and you've talked about this, where you have to keep putting yourself out there and keep designing things that are not going to do well to get to the part where you're doing well. So it's not that you just have this amazing design sense, which you do, but it's also coupled with the fact that you failed a lot and you've done things that don't work and you just keep pushing forward. So design is one thing, but also perseverance in the face of failure is also a big part of succeeding in this business and in business in general.
Absolutely. It's always been, you know, failure is the best teacher, I think. And the whole lesson of just trying, you know, trial and error, and not even just in design, right? When I think about a design or I think about my business or putting something out there, I have to think holistically about it. You know, how are we going to ship that? How is a customer going to install that? You know, what are our, you know, processes and procedures around a stolen package off somebody's doorstep. I mean, you really have to think of everything. And sometimes you just don't know what you don't know until you're in it. And so I also use that as the biggest teacher as well, too. And I involve my employees in that as well. I've had some business mentors in the past who have actually sort of slapped my hand for being so transparent with my employees. But I do that because it's not just about me and what I'm learning. Like, that knowledge needs to be shared with people. And I am a big believer that more heads are better than one, especially when it comes to processes and procedures. And they're, you know, replicating my designs every day. And so together we fail and succeed. And they have seen me cry multiple times. They've seen me get stressed out. They have seen me fail hard and they've seen me succeed. And it has also made them better employees because they're in it with me. I don't keep them at an arm's length. And so they also feel a part of the process. They've also been there since the beginning. And so they take just as much pride in those failures and in those successes, you know, as I do. And so it's a team of we, it's not just a team of me. And so especially when leading a company, it's important to set that tone and that company culture. And not, granted, I have worked for small mom and pop businesses, I have worked for large corporations. And so I really took the best of all of that and tried to lead and have a company where people could show up as themselves and have the freedom to express suggestions for change and to see things from a different perspective. Even when I come up with a new design, I will teach, you know, the women in my studio, hey, this is how I arrived at this end result. If you think of something that works better with the way that your brain works and you arrive at the same end result and it's still efficient, it's still, you know, around the same cost, then let's do that, because I'm not married to any one specific way of getting things done as long as it gets done the same way. And so, yeah, I think it's just, it really is just such, they always say it takes a village, and it definitely takes a village to help keep me on track, but I certainly couldn't do it without the customer's feedback, without my vendor input, and without the employees that are in it, you know, doing it every single day.
You've certainly come a long way from your only employee being an 8-year-old child helping you lift large credenzas in a farmer's market. Your idea of employees has changed, and that's what happens as your business grows, and you seem to have a very solid view on how you're dealing with your employees. But I want to move on from that and talk with you about momentum. Mm-hmm. And you've gotten a lot of momentum very, very fast. You were saying the first couple months you started putting things out there, you were winning awards, you were getting press, you were getting cold emails from giant companies asking you to wholesale, asking you if they could wholesale your product. And that's huge. And that can be an entire other conversation of how you're actually stocking those with those wholesale companies. I don't want to put that aside, but I want to talk about momentum and how you've been able to capture that and move that forward, because there's so many stories of somebody getting a great article in a magazine, or somebody getting some great press on a website, or somebody getting into a store and it just not going anywhere and it just ending. And I want to ask you about how you've taken that initial success and continue to snowball it into more and more opportunities.
Yeah, it brings a couple of things to mind, so I'm hoping that I will remember all of them. You're right. I had success very, very quickly and did not understand how to make the most of that, right? So if I could look back, if I could do it differently, I would have spent more time and focus on the marketing aspect. I was just reacting to sales. And so there wasn't anything proactive about it. And I get asked the same things that you mentioned before. You know, how did you get in with this retailer? How did you get this magazine to post? I literally just have to give all the credit to God and the fact that I barely know what I'm doing, because we had so much press coming our way for not anything that, I'll be honest, that I was intentionally doing. It just happened to be, you know, the times that we were in, it was just the right moment, the right time, that things really kind of took off. I will also say, after George Floyd, we did get a lot of people that were wanting to intentionally find Black businesses to support. And I will say, as a Midwest biracial artist, that was a little bit difficult for me to navigate because, you know, growing up, I never really felt quite white enough or Black enough. And so then suddenly I was sort of being judged based on my skin color to now be qualified to be a Black artist. And so I struggled with that for a little bit. And so I really kind of had to navigate with my gut what felt right, what didn't feel right, while also assuming that everyone has the best intentions, even if sometimes the delivery wasn't quite there. And so we also had our business kind of take off from there. As well, for the people that were looking for Black businesses to support. But just to give you some sort of facts and figures, you know, when I was doing Etsy by myself, I closed my first year at like 70,000 in sales. The next year it was 200,000. Pandemic year, it was almost $300,000. And that was just on Etsy. That didn't include my retailers, that didn't include our art curators that we worked with and things like that. So really, like, oh my gosh, like, it was like Dumb and Dumber. Our pets' heads are falling off. Like, what is happening? And I could not grasp with how quickly we were growing and then the exposure, you know, and all the articles and things that were being, you know, written about us. And I really just had to put marketing in the back burner just to stay ahead of orders. Now, I will say to your point, you know, and I say this for anybody, don't believe everything you see on social media, right? I look back now and there are definitely some deals with some particular businesses that I probably shouldn't have done deals with, but I didn't know what I didn't know. Again, I was looking for that validation, thinking if I'm aligned with this retailer, then that means that I've made it. But there are some contracts that we hold that really aren't doing much, to be fair, and just to be completely honest. And there are some days that I miss the simplicity of just being me in my house and making this, being able to stop and start when I want to. So I say that to say, if you're in the entrepreneur in this middle of the road where you're growing, you're going to have the next growing pains of the next area of growth. And then after that, it does not get easier. Working with retailers does not get easier. Every contract is its own animal. And that's something that you really have to grasp your head around as far as to where to go. Now with the momentum, now that we're, you know, where we are and continuing to scale, you know, now the pressure's on, right? Okay, now where do we go from here? Now, how do we continue to grow? Do we get inventory? Do we manufacture? And I was getting a lot of pressure of manufacturing overseas. Now, there are definitely pros and cons to doing that, but I got to be honest. I love the people that I work with. I love telling their stories. I love seeing the mom and, you know, the mom and pop shops, the people that are still in the garage doing beautiful work and doing what they love. I am a big believer, while it might not be the biggest margins, that we have the most talented people here in the U.S. that are still untapped. How do we tap that? How do we connect with those other small businesses so we can grow together? It's not just about my story. I firmly believe that we are better together. And how do we do that and connect with other small businesses to also open those doors and pave the way for them to grow as well too? I'm super passionate about keeping things as local as possible. And when I say local, you know, I try to always look for my local community first. So there are talented people here that are welders or people that I can tap into when I need resources. If not, where can I go within the United States to find somebody else that does great work that I can continue to grow with as well too, you know, before going overseas? But there is that pressure, right? We've worked with some major retailers that have said, we'd love to put you on the shelves. However, you need to have a bigger name. And I'm not about to go out there and stress out and compete with the big names of this world. That's never been my goal. You know, or you need to be able to stock on the shelves on like 900 stores. That's a big undertaking. And that is a big pressure of how successful are we really going to be? And so I'm a big fan of just because you can doesn't mean you should. And so just because those opportunities are there doesn't mean that that's the path for me. And those are just things that I've learned along the way. And it's also making sure that I don't drift from my mission and what's passionate to me about putting out good quality work, finding hardworking other small business individuals that I can also help grow like with as well. So it's hard to be able to not get caught up in that rat race of trying to compete with everybody and everything out there and stay on trend and do this with marketing. It's a lot, right? And so we're still doing a lot for being a small number of people. And I really just have to decide where we are best fit in within the design community. And while we're not going to be there for, we're not going to have, you know, something for everybody, what does it look like for us and how can we contribute to the design community with what we do best?
It doesn't get easier as you grow your business.
No.
It gets different. It gets,
yes,
the hard stuff stops and is replaced by other hard stuff that you didn't even know existed. You
Amen.
Get to another plateau and you say, I finally made it. And then you look out and mm-hmm. from you to the horizon, there's a whole new bunch of problems that you had no idea existed. So it's not that you suddenly get to a magical point in your business that all your problems go away. Your problems just change and adjust as you grow.
Agreed.
You've experienced that throughout your business. When this was just an idea that you had without any products, all the way up to today, where you're so popular, your retailers are asking you to stock more and keep up with their demand, and you don't know if you want to. And there's so much knowledge in between that. And I want to ask you, for somebody who is starting out in a business, or somebody who's done this for a while and is trying to sort of rekindle their love for it, or try and run their business better, or get to that next plateau with those new problems, what's some advice that you could share from your experiences so far to help those people out who are listening?
Yeah, gosh, it looks so different for so many people. First of all, I would say give yourself a lot of grace, because it's extremely hard. And there are a lot of things that people will never see you do that go into doing what you do. I think behind the scenes, a lot of people think that I am just out here designing and like living my best life. Like, no, you guys, I am stressed out some weeks, you know, on the brink of like crying and being in the fetal position under my desk, like feeling responsible for so many things and feeling like a failure. Like even now with all of the accolades, I still feel like a failure most days. I don't know if that will ever go away, but I've learned how to navigate that. So I would say show yourself a lot of grace, because you're doing the best that you can with what you know how. When you gain knowledge, experience, right, then you can make different decisions. You know, I would also say understand and know where your boundaries are. And that goes for not only with who you work with, but like how you work. So for someone like myself, I'm extremely disorganized. I am like, ooh, shiny squirrel, like constantly. And I put so much pressure on myself when I didn't know who I was and didn't realize that that can actually be an asset, that I just thought, well, if I'm going to be successful, it has to look like this. It has to look like this person on social media. It has to, you know, look like the build with Ethan, you know, it has to look a certain way. And that's what's good for them, but that doesn't mean that's what's good for you. And so one time someone said, Candace, I don't understand why you're trying to put yourself in a box that God didn't design for you to be in. And the pressure was really off. And I thought, you know what? I can still be successful and have receipts everywhere and not be great at, you know, accounting. Now I hire that out. You know, I don't have to be super organized. And so I sort of embrace that, because I know where I start and stop and where other people that are good at what they're good at can pick that up. So I would say, if you can, subcontract out some of the things that are on your plate, if you can afford to do that, right? So I will subcontract out HR stuff when I need to, or accounting and bookkeeping stuff where I need to. Sometimes I'll subcontract out marketing, like when I need to, things that can easily be taken off of my plate that someone else can pick up. And so at the end of the day, you can only do so much. And if you're someone like me, I think I can literally do 500 things in one day. I can really only do about 5. And so that doesn't also help to the feeling of like, I could have done more today. I could have done more. Like, it'll get done when it needs to get done, and don't rush the process. There are a lot of things or a lot of designs that I wish I'd have released by now. There is more momentum that I wish I would have made with certain retailers. There's a time for everything, and everything has a time. And so also give yourself room to be able to learn what you need to learn and to gain the knowledge and expertise along the way of things that they don't move as quickly as you would want them to.
I know you said that there's 500 things you want to do every day and you only get to 5 of them. And I appreciate you having this as one of the 5 things you do every day. So thank you very much. I know that you've helped a lot of people listening. So I do appreciate your time, and I appreciate your advice and everything you shared, and look forward to seeing where your business goes, and wishing you continued success in everything you do. Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you liked what you heard and you got value out of it, please think about leaving a review and subscribing wherever you listen. To learn more about the series, please visit buildingafurniturebrand.com, and feel free to reach out anytime with questions or guest suggestions to hello@buildingafurniturebrand.com. You can find me at The Build with Ethan on Instagram. Hope you enjoyed the show, and can't wait to bring you the next one.